preacher shouting about these being the end times of Revelation. Michael stood on the outer edge of the crowd, listening. He glanced up once at Angel's window. Someone moved back into the shadows. He ought to go over now and make his arrangements with the Duchess. His heart raced, and he broke out in a sweat just thinking about it. He would wait a little longer. Someone touched his back, and he turned to see an older woman looking up at him with bloodshot eyes. Her hair was dark and curly, and she wore a low-cut, garish green dress. "I'm Lucky," she said. "Angel's friend." She was drunk and slurring her words. "Saw you from across the street." She nodded toward the palace. "You are the one, ain't you? The one who kept asking Angel to go away with him?" Anger shot through him like a range fire. "What else did she tell you?"
"Don't get mad, mister. Just go and ask her again."
"Did she tell you to come down here?" Was she up there laughing at him behind the curtain?
"No."
She shook her head sharply. "Angel, she never asked for nothing." Tears filled the woman's eyes, and she wiped her nose on her shawl. "She don't even know I'm talking to you."
"Well, thanks, Lucky, but the last time I saw her she couldn't wait until I walked out her door, and it was real clear she hoped I'd never come back."
Lucky looked up at him. "Get her out of there, mister. Even if you don't care anymore, even if Angel don't, just get her out of there." Suddenly alarmed, Michael caught her arm as she turned away. "What's the matter with her, Lucky? What are you trying to tell me?" Lucky wiped her nose again.
"I can't talk anymore. I gotta get back before Duchess misses me."
She crossed the street, but instead of going in the front, she sneaked around the back. Michael looked up at Angel's window. Something was wrong. Very wrong. He strode across the street and went in through the swinging doors. Except for a couple of men playing cards and drinking, the place was almost deserted. The bodyguard wasn't at the foot of the stairs to stop him from going up. The hall was dark and quiet. Too quiet. A man came out of Angel's room, and the Duchess was with him. She saw Michael first.
"What are you doing up here? No one's allowed upstairs until they've dealt with me."
"I want to see Angel."
"She's not working today."
He looked at the black bag in the man's hand.
"What's the matter with her?"
"Nothing," the Duchess answered sharply. "Angel's just taking a few days off to rest. Now get out of here."
She tried to block his way, but Michael set her aside and went into the room. The Duchess grabbed at his arm.
"Stay away from her. Doc, stop him."
The doctor fixed her with a cold glare.
"No, ma'am, I won't."
Michael reached the bed and saw her. Oh, sweet Lord.
"It was McGowan," Doc said quietly from behind Michael.
"It wasn't my fault," Duchess said, drawing back in fear from the look on Michael's face. "It wasn't."
"She's right," Doc said. "If Duchess hadn't come in when she did, he probably would have killed her."
"Now will you get out of here and leave her alone?" Duchess said.
"I'll leave, all right," Michael answered, "and I'm taking her with me."
Angel roused to someone's touch. The Duchess was ranting again. Angel wanted the darkness. She didn't want to feel anything, ever again. But someone was there, so close she could feel the warmth of his breath.
"I'm going to take you home with me," the gentle voice said.
"You want to take her home, fine. I'll gift wrap her," the Duchess said. "But you're going to pay first."
"Woman, have you no decency?"
Another man's voice.
"The girl will be lucky to live."
"Oh, she'll live. And don't look down your nose at me. I know, Angel. She'll live. And he can't have her for nothing. I can tell you something else. She brought this on herself. The little witch knew exactly what she was doing. She pushed Brett over the edge. She's been nothing but trouble since the day I picked her up out of the mud in San Francisco."
"You can have your gold," came the voice that had pulled her from the darkness. But now it was hard. Angry. Had she done something wrong again?
but get out of here before I do something I'll regret.
The door slammed. Pain exploded in Angel's head, and she groaned. She could hear two men talking. One of them spoke to her.
I want to marry you before we leave together.
Marry her? She gave a whimpering laugh. Someone took her hand. She thought it was Lucky at first, but Lucky's hand was soft and small. This one was large and hard, the skin rough with calluses.
Just say yes.
She would agree to wed Satan himself if it would get her out of the palace.
Why not? She managed.
She drifted on a sea of pain and quiet voices. The room was full of them. Lucky was there, and Doc, and the other man whose voice was so familiar, but she still couldn't place it. She felt someone slip a ring on her finger. Her head was raised gently, and she was given something bitter to drink.
Lucky took her hand.
They're rigging his wagon so he can take you home with him. You'll sleep all the way with the laudanum you drank. You won't feel nothing.
She felt Lucky touch her hair.
You're a regular married lady now, Angel. He had a wedding ring on a chain around his neck. He said it belonged to his mother, Angel. He put his mother's wedding ring on your finger. Can you hear me, honey?
Angel wanted to ask who she had married, but what did it matter? The pain gradually receded. She was so tired. Maybe she would die after all. It would all be over then. She heard the clink of a bottle against a glass. Lucky was drinking again. Angel could hear her crying. She squeezed Lucky's hand weakly. Lucky squeezed back and sobbed softly.
Angel, she stroked her hair. What'd you say to make Brett do this to you? Did you want him to kill you? Is life really that bad?
She kept stroking her hair.
Hang on, Angel. Don't give up.
Angel sank back into comfortable darkness while Lucky rambled.
I'm going to miss you, Angel. When you're living out there in your cabin with the climbing roses all around, think about me once in a while, will you? Remember your old friend, Lucky.
Chapter 7 From Charles d'Orléans. I am dying of thirst by the side of the fountain. Angel awakened slowly to the wonderful aroma of good cooking. She tried to sit up, then gasped in pain.
Easy, a man's voice said, and a strong arm slid beneath her shoulders, raising her gently.
She felt something put behind her to support her back and head.
The dizziness will pass.
Her eyes were swollen almost shut, and she could barely make out a man dressed in high boots, dungarees, and a red shirt. He was bending over the fire and stirring in a big iron pot. Morning light was streaming through a window in front of her. The light hurt her eyes. She was in a cabin not much bigger than her room at the palace. The floor was wood plank, the fireplace multicolored stone. Besides the bed, she could make out the fuzzy shapes of a table, four laden shelves, a willow chair, a chest of drawers, and a big black trunk with blankets stacked on top of it. The man came back and sat down on the edge of the bed.
Do you feel up to eating something, Mara?
Mara. She froze. Snatches of things came back. McGowan's beating, voices all around her, someone asking her. Her heart thudded in her chest. She felt her fingers. There was a ring on one. The throbbing in her head worsened. She swore softly. Of all the men in this world, it had to be him.
It's venison stew. You must be hungry.
She opened her mouth to tell him where to put it, when pain shot along her jaw and silenced her. Hosea got up and went back to the fire. When he came to sit down again, he had a bowl and spoon. She saw he meant to feed her. She said something low and foul and tried to turn her head away.
but even that simple movement proved too much.
"I'm glad you're feeling better," he said dryly.
Pressing her lips together, she refused to eat. Her traitorous stomach growled.
"Feed the wolf in your belly, Mara. Then you can try fighting the one you think is at your door."
She gave in. She was starving. The gruel of meat and vegetables he spooned into her mouth was better than anything Henry had ever made. The throbbing in her head lessened. Her jaw ached horribly. Her arm was in some kind of sling.
"Your shoulder was dislocated," Michael said. "You've got 4 broken ribs, a cracked collarbone, and a concussion. Doc didn't know if you had any internal injuries."
Perspiration was dripping down the sides of her face from the painful effort of sitting up. She spoke slowly and stiffly.
"So you got me after all. Lucky you. Is this home?"
"Yes."
"How did I get here?"
"In my wagon. Joseph helped me rig up a hammock so I could move you out of the palace."
She looked down at the simple gold band on her finger. She clenched her hand.
"How far am I from paradise?"
"A lifetime."
"In miles?"
30. "We're northwest of New Helvetia."
He offered her the spoon again.
"Try to eat some more. You need to put on some weight."
"Not enough meat on my bones to please you?" Michael made no response. Angel couldn't tell whether her sarcasm had gotten to him or not. It occurred to her belatedly that she might anger him, and this wasn't the best time to do so. She swallowed more soup and tried not to show her fear. He went back to the cooking pot and filled her bowl again. He sat at a small table and ate by himself.
"How long have I been here?" she asked.
3 days.
3 days?
"You've been delirious most of it. Your fever broke yesterday afternoon. Can you remember anything?"
"No."
She didn't try.
"I suppose I have you to thank for saving my life," she said bitterly.
He went on eating in silence.
"So what's it going to be, mister?"
"What do you mean?"
"What do you want from me?"
"Nothing for a while."
"Just talk, right?"
He looked up at her then, and she felt uneasy at his calm. When he stood up and came toward her, her heart pounded hard and fast.
"I'm not going to hurt you, Mara," he said gently. "I love you."
It wasn't the first time a man had said he loved her.
"I'm flattered," she said dryly.
When he didn't say anything more, she clenched the blanket in her fist.
"By the way, my name isn't Mara, it's Angel. You ought to get the name right if you're going to put the ring on my finger."
"You said I could call you anything I wanted."
Men had called her by other names than Angel. Some nice, some not so nice. But she didn't want this man calling her anything but Angel. That's who he had married, Angel, and Angel was all he was going to get.
"The name Mara comes from the Bible," he said. "It's in the Book of Ruth."
"And being a Bible-reading man, you figured Angel is too good a name for me."
"Good's got nothing to do with it. Angel isn't your real name."
"Angel is who I am."
His face hardened.
"Angel was a prostitute in paradise, and she doesn't exist anymore."
"Nothing's any different now from what it's always been, whatever you choose to call me." Michael sat on the edge of the bed.
"It's a whole lot different," he said. "You're my wife now."
She was shaking with weakness, but she fought back. "Do you really think that makes a difference? How? You paid for me just like you always did."
"Paying the Duchess seemed the quickest way to get rid of her. I didn't think you'd mind."
"Oh, I don't mind."
Her head throbbed.
"You'd better lie down again."
She didn't have the strength to protest when he put his arm around her and removed the support from her back. She felt his hand, rough with calluses and warm against her bare skin, as he eased her back.
Don't push it, he said, and pulled the blanket up again.
She tried to get a good look at his face and couldn't.
I hope you don't mind waiting. I'm not up to showing any gratitude right now.
She heard the smile in his response. I'm a patient man.
His fingertips ran lightly across her damp forehead.
I shouldn't have let you sit up so long. You're not up to more than a few minutes at a time.
She wanted to argue, but knew it was useless. He was bound to know she was in great pain.
What hurts most?
Nothing I want you touching. She closed her eyes, wishing she could die so the pain would end. When he touched her temples, she drew in her breath.
Relax.
His caress was neither exploring nor intimate, and she eased.
By the way, he said, my name is Michael, Michael Hosea, in case you didn't remember.
I didn't, she lied.
Michael, not too hard to remember.
If you want to. He laughed softly. She knew she had gotten to him that last night at the brothel. Why had he taken her away from paradise with him? When he had walked out the door, she never expected to see him again. So why had he come back? What use was she to him like this?
You're tensing up again. Relax the muscles in your forehead, he said. Come on, Mara. Think about that if you have to think about anything.
Why did you come back?
God sent me.
He was crazy. That was it. He was just plain crazy.
Try to stop thinking so much. There's a mockingbird outside the window. Listen to it.
His hands were so gentle. She did what he told her, and the pain lessened. He talked to her softly, and she grew sleepy. She had heard all kinds of men's voices before, but none like his. Deep, calm, soothing. She was so tired, she wanted to die and sleep forever. She could barely keep her eyes open.
You and God better not expect much, she mumbled. I want everything.
Your litany. He could hope all he wanted, and he could ask, too, but all he was going to get was what was left. Nothing. Nothing at all.
Chapter 8 From Proverbs, Chapter 14, Verse 6 A mocker seeks wisdom and never finds it. Angel didn't care one way or the other whether she ever got up again. A still darkness lay heavily on her. She had seen a way to end her miserable life and had reached for it in a moment of desperation, and she'd failed again. Rather than find the peace she craved, she found pain. Rather than be free, she was in bondage to another man. Why couldn't she do anything right? Why did all her plans go awry? Hosea was the one man she had wanted most to avoid, and now he owned her. She had no strength to fight him. Worse, she had to rely on him for food, water, shelter, everything. Her utter dependency on him chafed bitterly. She was raw with it, and she hated him even more because of it. Had Hosea been an ordinary man, she would have known how to fight him, but he wasn't. Nothing she said bothered him. He was a mountain of granite. She could not wound him. His quiet determination unnerved her. There was a look about him now that she couldn't describe. He once said he had learned a lot about her during her fever, but he didn't say what. She worried about what everything he wanted. Whenever she was awake, he was there. She just wanted him to leave her alone. Angel felt a trap closing in on her. She wasn't in a fancy brownstone this time. She wasn't in a rotting tent made out of a ship's sail or a two-story brothel. But it was a trap nonetheless, and this lunatic held the key. What did he want from her? And why did she sense he was more dangerous than all the other men she had ever known? After a week, Michael left her in the cabin by herself for a few hours at a time, while he went out to work. She didn't know what he did, and she didn't ask. She didn't care. She was relieved he wasn't hovering over her, wiping her brow or spooning soup into her mouth. She wanted to be by herself. She wanted to think, and she couldn't do that with him hanging around. The aloneness she had craved turned to loneliness, and think was all she did. It rained, and she listened to the pounding on the roof, and with the pounding came visions of the shack on the docks, and Mama, and Rab. Thinking of Rab led to Duke, and Duke led to all the rest, and she thought she would go mad. Maybe she would start talking to God, too, like this crazy man who had put his mother's wedding ring on her finger. Why had he done it? Why had he married her? Then, there he would be in the doorway, big, strong, quiet, and looking at her with that way of his. She wanted to ignore him, but he filled the cabin with his presence. Even when he just sat silent before the fire reading the same old worn book, he took over the whole place. He was taking her over with it. Even when she shut her eyes, she saw him there. He was sitting in a chair before the fire, right inside her head. She didn't understand him any more now than she had at the brothel. But he had changed somehow. He was different. For one thing, he didn't talk a lot. In fact, he talked very little. He would smile at her and ask how she was feeling, or if she needed anything, and then go about his own business, whatever his business was. Day after day, she watched him put his hat on and knew he was going to leave her alone again. "Mister," she said, determined never to call him by his name, "why did you bring me back here if all you're going to do is leave me alone in this cabin?"
"I'm giving you time to think."
"Think about what?"
"Whatever you need to think about. You'll get up when you're ready."
He took his hat from the hook by the door and left. The morning sunlight streamed in through an open window. A fire burned in the grate. Her stomach was full, and she was warm. She should be satisfied. She should be able to relax and just lean back and not think about anything. Solitude should be enough. What was the matter with her? Maybe it was the silence. She was used to sounds attacking her from all sides. Men knocking on the doors, men telling her what they wanted, men telling her what to do, men shouting, men singing, men swearing in the bar below. Sometimes chairs crashed against walls and glasses shattered, and there was always the Duchess telling her how grateful she should be. Or McGowan telling some man his time was up, and if he didn't get his pants on and get out, he'd regret it. But she'd never had this silence, this quiet that rang in her ears. She complained.
"There's plenty of sound," Hosea said. "Just listen for it."
With nothing else to occupy her, she did. And he was right. The silence changed, and she heard sounds breaking through. It was like the rain used to be when she put out the shiny tins in the dark little shack. She began to pick out voices in the chorus around her. A cricket lived under the bed. A bullfrog was just outside the window. A throng of feathered companions came and went outside. Robins, sparrows, and a noisy jay. Finally, Angel stood on her own feet. When she looked for something to put on, she found nothing. It hadn't occurred to her until then that nothing in the cabin belonged to her. None of her own things were here. Where were they? Hadn't he thought to bring them along? What was she supposed to wear? A scratchy gunny sack? He had precious little himself from the looks of it. A small chest of drawers yielded an extra pair of worn long johns, a pair of dungarees and some heavy socks, all far too large for her. An old battered black trunk was in the corner, but she was too tired to open and rummage through it. Naked, and too weak to drag a blanket off the bed to put around herself, she just leaned on the windowsill and drank in the fresh, cold air. Half a dozen tiny birds flitted from branch to branch in a big tree. A larger bird strutted and pecked at the ground, no more than 6 feet from the cabin. He was so cocky she smiled. A soft breeze drifted in, and with it a scent so rich she could almost taste it. The meadowland near Mama's cottage used to smell just like this. She closed her eyes and savored it. She opened her eyes again and gazed at the stretch of land. "Oh, Mama," she whispered, her throat tightening. Weakness crept up her spine, and her ribs began to ache again. She was shaking and growing lightheaded. Michael walked in, and when he saw her standing naked by the open window, went without a word to take a quilt from the bed. He swung it around her, and she buckled beneath the weight of it. He scooped her up gently. "How long have you been up?"
"Not long enough to be put back in bed."
He held her in his arms like a child, his warmth soaking into her. He smelled of earth and sun.
"You can put me down now, but not in bed. I've spent my whole life in bed and I'm sick of it."
Michael smiled. She wasn't going to do anything by halves, even getting on her feet again. He put her in the chair before the fire and added another log. Pain was shooting along her sides. She clenched the arms of the chair, feeling every spot where McGowan had laid boot and fist. He hadn't missed much. She touched her face gingerly and frowned.
"Do you have a mirror?"
Michael took a shiny tin he used for shaving and handed it to her. Aghast, she stared. After a long moment, she held the tin up to him, and he set it back on the shelf. "How much did you pay for me?"
"Everything I had."
She laughed weakly. "Mister, you're a fool. How could he even look at her like this?"
"There's no permanent damage."
"No?
Well, at least I have all my teeth, that's something." "I didn't marry you for your looks."
"Of course you didn't. You married me for my charming nature. Or did God tell you to do it?"
"Maybe he figured the horns in your head fit the holes in mine."
Angel rested her head back. "I knew you were crazy the first time I laid eyes on you." She was weary past endurance and thought how much more comfortable she would be lying on her back on that straw mattress again. She might make it to her feet, but one step and she was going to break her nose again right on the plank floor. Michael came to her and lifted her gently, ignoring her protests.
"Mister, I told you I don't want to lie down yet."
"Fine. Sit up in bed."
"What happened to all my things?"
"I forgot them. Besides, what you had wouldn't suit you now anyway. A farmer's wife doesn't wear satin and lace."
"No, I suppose she trots naked up and down your rows of beans and carrots."
He grinned, humor lighting his eyes.
"Might be kind of interesting."
Angel could see why Rebecca had been so enamored of him, but good looks made no difference to her. Duke had been a handsome man, a charismatic charmer. "Look," she said tightly, "I want to start getting up and about on my own, with something on."
"I'll provide you what you need when you need it."
"I need it now."
His mouth tipped.
"I reckon so,"
he said with grating calm. He went to the old battered trunk and opened it. He took out a bundle and brought it to her.
"These will have to do for a while."
Curious, she untied it. The gray wool fell apart, and she realized it was a worn cape. Inside were two linsey-woolsey skirts, one faded brown, the other black. Two blouses, one that probably was white once, but was now almost yellow, and the other with faded blue and pink flowers. Both would button up to her chin and had sleeves long enough to pass her wrists. Two bonnets matched the blouses. Tucked modestly inside them were two simple camisoles, pantalettes, and darned black woolen stockings. Last, she found a pair of down-at-the-heels, high-buttoned black shoes. She looked up at him in wry disbelief. "I shall be forever grateful for this bounty."
I know they're not exactly what you're used to, but I think you're going to find these things suit you better than anything you've ever worn.
I'll try and take your word for it.
She fingered the Lindsay Woolsey.
He smiled slightly.
In another week or two, you'll be up taking on a few chores.
Her head came up, but he was already on his way out the door.
Chores? What chores did he have in mind? Milking a cow? Cooking? Maybe he would expect her to chop the firewood and tote it, along with the water from the creek, and his clothes. He would want her to wash and iron. What a laugh. She was good at one thing and nothing else. He was going to have a real awakening when she started doing chores.
He came back in with an armload of firewood.
Mister, I don't know the first thing about what a farm wife does.
He stacked the wood neatly.
I didn't expect you would.
Then just what chores did you have in mind?
Cooking, washing, ironing, the garden.
I just told you.
You're smart. You'll learn.
He put another log on the fire.
You won't be doing anything really heavy until you're able, which you won't be for another month at least.
Really heavy? What did that mean?
She decided to take another tack instead. Her mouth curved in a well-practiced smile.
What about the other wifely duties?
Michael glanced back at her.
When it means something more to you than work, we'll consummate the marriage.
She was taken aback by his frankness. Where was the farmer who blushed and jumped when she touched him? Unnerved, she retreated in anger.
Fine, mister. I'll do whatever you've got in mind. I'll match you hour for hour, day for day since you started taking care of me.
And when you figure we're square, you'll leave. Is that it?
I'm going back to paradise and get what the Duchess owes me.
No, you're not, he said quietly.
Yes, I am.
She would get her money from the Duchess even if she had to take it out of the old crone's hide. Then she would hire someone to build her a cabin just like this one, far enough away from a town so she couldn't hear the noise and smell the stench, but close enough so that she could get what supplies she needed. She would buy a gun, a big gun, and plenty of bullets, and if any man came around knocking at her door, she would use it, unless she needed some money. Then she would have to let him in to do business first. But if she was careful and smart, she could live a long time on what she had already earned. She could hardly wait. She had never lived all by herself, and it would be heaven.
You were left to yourself for an entire week, a small voice mocked her from deep inside, and you were miserable, remember? Admit it, being by yourself isn't heaven at all, not when you have so many demons to keep you company.
You may have paid a lot of gold dust for me, but you don't own me, mister.
Michael studied her with patience. She was small and weak, but possessed an iron will. It shone from her defiant blue eyes and the rigid way she was holding herself. She thought she had enough to overcome him. She was wrong. He was doing God's will, and he had plans of his own, plans that kept growing, but he had said all he was going to say for a while. Let her think on it.
You're right, he said. I don't own you. But you're not running away from this.
They ate at opposite sides of the room, she on the bed with her plate in her lap, and he at the table. The only sound in the room was the crackling fire. Angel set the plate on the side table. She was shaking violently, but was still determined not to lie down. She studied him. Sooner or later she would figure him out. He was a man, wasn't he? He couldn't be that complex. She would take him apart piece by piece.
They all have foibles, honey, Sally had told her. You just have to sort out their messages and find out what it is they want from you. As long as you make them happy, you'll get by just fine. Otherwise, they turn mean.
Like Duke when he was crossed. Angel had known all about Duke after the first night. He liked power. He wanted immediate obedience. She didn't have to like what he wanted to do as long as she did it.
With a smile.
Hesitance earned that cold, dark look. Protest, a slap. Defiance, brute force. Running away earned the end of his lit cheroot. By the time he tired of keeping her all to himself, she had learned one major lesson. To pretend. No matter what she felt, no matter how frightened or repulsed or angry, pretend to like whatever the men wanted and paid to get, and if she couldn't pretend to like it, she had to pretend not to care. She had become real good at that. Sally understood, but Sally had her own rules.
You got a bad break when that drunken fool brought you here.
Then again, maybe not. Seeing as how your mama was a prostitute, too, it weren't likely any folks from uptown would want you, no matter how pretty you are. Whatever might have been, here's what is, Angel, and here's where you're going to stay.
She cupped Angel's chin and forced her to look up. And I don't ever want to see that look on your face after today. Whatever you feel, you learn to keep it to yourself, understand? The rest of us have our own sad stories to tell, some worse than yours. You learn to read a man, give him what he pays for, and send him on his way with a smile on his face. You do that, and I'll treat you like the mama you lost. You don't, and you'll think your time with Duke was heaven.
Sally turned out to be a woman of her word, and Angel learned all she ever wanted to know about men. Some knew what they wanted, some only thought they did. Some said one thing when they meant another. Some had guts. More had gall. However or whatever, it all came down to the same thing. They laid down their money for a piece of her. In the beginning, chunk by bloody chunk. After a while, drop by drop. The only difference was whether they quietly slid the money under the silk undergarments discarded on the foot of her bed, or laid it in the palm of her hand and looked her right in the eye. She looked at Michael Hosea. What sort of man was he? Fingering the worn clothing, she worried her lip. Maybe he wanted what he bought wrapped up in Lindsay Woolsey so he wouldn't have to look at it too closely. Maybe he didn't want to see it for what it was. No lantern, please, and keep the ring on your finger so we can pretend this is right. Then I won't have to think what I'm doing is immoral. She could play virgin for him. She could even play grateful if it came to that. Oh, yes, thanks a heap for saving me. She could play anything as long as she knew it only had to last a little while. Jesus. God. I'm tired of pretending. I'm sick of living like this. Why can't I just close my eyes and die?
I've had enough, she said, putting her plate on the side table.
More than enough. Michael had been watching her. I'm not going to give you anything more than you can handle.
Angel looked back at him and knew he didn't mean chores. And what about you, mister? Do you think you can handle what I'm going to give you?
Try me.
Angel watched him eat his supper. He wasn't worried about anything. Every inch of him told her he knew who he was and what he was about, even if she didn't. And she knew if she didn't get well and get away soon, he would end up taking her apart, piece by piece. The next morning, Angel dressed as soon as Hosea was out the door. She slipped on the camisole and tied up the frayed ribbons. The fabric was thick and unrevealing, covering her completely. She had never worn anything so simple, so sweet, so cheap. Who had worn these things before her? What had happened to her? Judging by her clothing, the woman had been prim and hard-working, just like those women who had turned their backs when Mama walked by. Angel found the button hook in the left boot and put the shoes on. They fit well enough to get by. Michael came, and she looked up at him. She raised one brow. I thought you said you were never married. Those things belong to my sister, Tessie. She and her husband Paul came west with me. She died of fever on the Green River. It hurt to remember burying Tessie in the middle of the road west. Every wagon in the train had gone over her grave, so there would be no trace. He and Paul hadn't wanted her dug up by Indians or animals.
He still couldn't get over burying his beloved little sister like that, with no stone or cross to mark the place. Tessie deserved better.
What happened to her husband? Did he die too?
He shrugged off his coat. His land is at the end of the valley, lying fallow. He's panning gold on the Yuba. Paul's never been able to stick to anything for long.
His love for Tess had kept him walking a straight road for a while, but when she died, he had gone wild again.
Angel smiled mirthlessly. So your brother-in-law is another of the multitude raping the streams of California, and anything else to be found?
Michael turned and looked at her.
Angel felt that look, and she knew what he was wondering.
If he's a man and he's on the Yuba, he probably made it to the palace.
She saw she had guessed correctly. With a careless shrug, she stabbed deeper.
I couldn't tell you whether he made it to my room. Describe him, maybe I'll remember.
Her words were hard and cold, but Michael wasn't fooled. She was trying awfully hard to drive him away. He wondered why.
His silence unnerved her.
You needn't worry whether he knows me or not. I'll be gone before he gets back.
You'll be right here with me, where you belong.
She smiled coolly.
Sooner or later a wagon train of virgins will arrive, all respectable in their dusty, worn-out Lindsay Woolsey. Then you'll come to your senses. Right about the time you have to say, "Meet my wife. I bought her out of a brothel in Paradise back in 51.
It won't matter who comes. I married you.
Well, that's easy enough to rectify.
She slipped the wedding ring off her finger.
See? We're not married anymore.
She held it out to him in the palm of her hand. Simple as that.
Michael searched her face. Did she really believe it was that easy? Just take the ring off and the marriage is null and void and everything goes back the way it was?
That's where you're wrong, Mara. We're still married, whether you're wearing the ring or not, but I want you to keep it on just the same.
She frowned slightly and did as he said. She turned the ring on her finger.
Lucky said it belonged to your mother.
It did.
She let her hands drop to her sides.
Just give me the word when you want it back.
I won't.
She rested her hands in her lap and looked at him indolently.
Whatever you want, mister.
That got to him. I hate that phrase, whatever you want, like you're offering me coffee.
Whatever you want, she had offered her body the same way.
We'd better get one thing straight. I married you for better or worse, and until death parts us. I made vows before God when I married you, and I'm never going to break them.
Angel knew all about God. Do everything right or he'd squash you like a cockroach. That was God. She saw the darkness in Hosea's eyes and said nothing.
Mama had believed in God. Mama had had faith. She had opened herself up wide. Our Father, who art in heaven, was in the same realm as Alex Stafford. Angel wasn't fool enough to open herself up for anyone, least of all him. And if this man figured he could make her...
She had learned early that what you don't believe in can't hurt you.
"Do you remember anything about the wedding?"
Michael said, startling her from her grim thoughts.
"I remember some man in black talking over me with a voice deader than Jesus."
"You said yes. Do you remember that?"
"I didn't say yes. I said why not?"
"It will do."
Chapter 9. From Jesus, the Gospel of Matthew. Chapter 11, verse 29. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest. Dressing was all Angel managed to do the first few days out of bed. After a week on her feet, she ventured outside. It gave Michael an odd pang to see her in Tessie's clothes. No two women could have been more different. Tess, sweet and caring, uncomplicated and open. Mara,
cold and indifferent, complex and closed. Tessie, dark and muscular, Mara, blonde and slender. Michael didn't try to fool himself that she'd come outside because she was lonely and wanted his company. She was just tired of being cooped up in the cabin. She was bored. But Angel was lonely, and because of it, she was edgy and defensive when Michael approached. After all, she didn't want him getting any wrong ideas. "When do I start plowing the fields?" she said dryly. "In the fall." She glanced up at him sharply. Michael laughed and brushed the hair back off her shoulder.
"You feel up to taking a little walk?"
"How far?"
"Until you say stop."
He took her hand, trying not to let it bother him that hers lay like a dead fish in his. Passive resistance. He showed her the corn crib and the gear shed. He took her to the log bridge over the stream where he planned to build the spring house to store meat and dairy products, when he could afford to buy a cow. He walked her along the pathway to the small barn and showed her the two draft horses. He pointed out the fields he had plowed and planted, and then he took her out into the open meadowland.
"I started out west with 8 oxen and ended up with the 2 you see out there."
"What happened to the rest?"
"Indians stole 1, and 5 died in harness. It was hard going," he said. "Animals weren't the only ones dying along the Humboldt Sink."
Michael looked down at her and saw how pale she was. She wiped perspiration from her forehead with the back of her hand. He asked if she wanted to head back. She said no. He headed back anyway. She was played out and too stubborn to admit it.
Lord, is she going to be this bull-headed about everything?
On the way back to the cabin, Michael showed her where he wanted to put a grape arbor.
"We'll sit beneath it on hot days. There's nothing smells better than grapes ripening in the sun. We'll add a bedroom and kitchen and put a porch on the west side so we can sit in the evenings and watch the sunset and the stars come out. On hot summer afternoons, we'll sip apple cider and watch our corn grow. And children someday, God willing."
Her stomach dropped.
"You've enough work planned out to last a long while."
Michael tipped her chin and looked straight into her eyes.
"It'll take us a lifetime, Mara."
She jerked her chin away.
"Don't go pinning your hopes on me, mister. I have my own plans, and they don't include you."
She went the rest of the way by herself. The walk had been good for her, but she was exhausted. Still, she didn't want to be inside. She dragged his chair out the door so she could sit in the open. She wanted to feel the warmth of the sun on her face. She wanted to smell the fresh air. A soft afternoon breeze played with her hair, and she could smell the earth, strong and rich. Her muscles loosened, and she closed her eyes. Michael returned from work to find her sleeping. Not even the bruises darkening her eyes and jaw marred her look of peace. He took a tendril of her hair and rubbed it between his fingers. It was silk. She moved slightly. He looked at the slender column of her white throat and watched the steady pulse there. He longed to lean down and press his mouth to it. He wanted to breathe in the scent of her.
"Lord, I love her, but is it always going to feel like this, like there's an ache inside me I'll never get over?"
Angel roused. She opened her eyes and started, seeing Hosea standing above her. The sun was behind him, and she couldn't see his face or guess what he was thinking. She pushed her hair back and looked away.
"How long have I been sitting here?"
"You looked peaceful. Sorry if I awakened you. You've got some color in your cheeks."
She touched them and felt the warmth. "Add red to the black and blue."
"Are you hungry?"
She was.
"You might as well start teaching me to cook."
She winced from pain as she got up and followed him inside. She would need to know how to cook for herself when she had a place of her own.
"First thing you have to do is get a good fire laid."
He poked the coals into a fiery bed and added more wood. He went out with a bucket and came back with a chunk of salted venison. He cut it into pieces and dropped them into the boiling pot. Angel could smell the pungent herbs as he rubbed them between his palms and dropped them into the bubbling water.
"We'll leave that cooking a while. Come on outside with me."
He took a basket, and she followed him to a vegetable garden. Hunkering down, he showed her how to tell which carrots and onions were ready for harvest. He pulled up a mature potato plant. She didn't want to admit she was astonished. Had anyone asked, she would have said potatoes came from Ireland. The one plant he pulled up produced enough potatoes to last several days. As Angel straightened, she saw Hosea hunkered down a few feet away, yanking plants up and tossing them aside. A piercing recollection of Mama in the moonlit garden froze her. "Why are you tearing up your garden?" Michael glanced up at her tone. Her face was white and drawn. He straightened and brushed his hands on his pants.
"I'm pulling up weeds. They're choking everything else. I haven't had time to work out here. One of the things I'll ask of you is tending the garden, when you're ready."
He picked up the basket and nodded toward the hills. "There are other foodstuffs growing wild, chicory, mustard, and miner's lettuce, mostly. I'll teach you what to look for. Down the creek a half mile are blackberries. They come ripe in late summer. There are blueberries a half mile up the hill. We've got apples and walnuts as well." He handed her the basket. "You can wash those vegetables in the creek." She did what he told her and came back to the cabin. Michael showed her how to peel and pare them and left her to it. The meat was boiling in the pot over the fire, and he took an iron hook and slid the pot to the outer edge of the fire.
"Stir it once in a while. I'm going out and see to the stock."
The stew didn't seem to be boiling fast enough, so Angel slid the pot back over the fire again.
Then it boiled too fast, and she slid it away.
She hovered, stirring and sliding, sliding and stirring. The heat and work were draining. She brushed the damp strands of hair back from her forehead. Her eyes smarted from smoke. Michael came in with a bucket of water. He slammed it down, sloshing it on the floor.
"Watch out!" He caught her arm and yanked her back from the fire.
"What are you doing?"
"Your skirt's smoking. In another minute you would have been in flames."
"I had to get close enough to stir the stew." The pot lid was banging, the meal boiling over the side and hissing on the red coals. Without thinking, she grabbed the handle. She yelped, swore vilely, and snatched the hook down again.
"Easy," Michael warned, but she was in no mood to listen.
She yanked too hard and dislodged the bar. It clanged and the pot fell, dumping the contents. The fire hissed and sputtered violently. A cloud of smoke billowed and filled the cabin with a horrible stench of burning stew. She couldn't even do this right. Angel threw the iron hook into the fireplace with the mess and sat in the willow chair. Leaning forward, she held her aching ribs. Michael opened the two windows and the door, and the smoke began to clear. Teeth clenched, Angel watched a piece of venison go up in flames. "Your dinner's ready, mister." He tried not to smile.
"You'll do better next time."
She glared up at him. "I don't know anything about cooking. I don't know a weed from a carrot, and if you set me behind your plow, you won't have a straight furrow worth planting." She stood. "You want me to work? Fine, I'll work. The only way I know how, right there," she said, pointing at his bed. "Right now, if you like, mister. If the bed doesn't suit your fancy, how about the floor, or your stable, or anywhere else you'd like? Whatever you want, just let me know." He let out a breath. "It was only a pot of stew, Mara." She seethed with frustration. "How did a saint like you pick me? Are you testing your faith, is that it?" She swept past him and went outside. She wanted to run away, but couldn't. Every step hurt. She barely made it to the field before she had to stop and get her breath. He had jarred her when he pulled her away from the fire, and she hurt all over. But the physical pain was nothing to her own self-disgust and humiliation. She was stupid. She didn't know anything. How was she going to manage on her own if she couldn't cook a simple meal? She didn't even know how to build a fire. She didn't know anything necessary to survive.
You're going to learn.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not asking for his help. I'm not going to owe him anything. She clenched her burned hand into a fist. I didn't ask him to come back. I didn't ask for any of this. She went down to the creek to soak her hand and nurse her grievances.
Chapter 10. From Hosea, Chapter 2, Verses 14 through 15a.
Therefore, behold, I will allure her, bring her into the wilderness, and speak kindly to her. Then I will give her her vineyards from there, and the valley of Achor as a door of hope. The mess in the fireplace was cleaned up when Angel came back, but Hosea was gone. She expected to feel relief at his absence, but she didn't. Instead, there was a hollowness inside her that made her feel she was drifting in empty space. Was he out there somewhere thinking up a suitable punishment for her outburst? What a fool he must think her. She could bet his sister had known how to build a fire, cook a fine meal, plow a field, and do whatever else needed doing. She'd probably known every wild vegetable plant from the Atlantic to the Pacific at a distance of 100 feet. She probably had been able to smell out wild game and then shoot and dress it herself. Dejected, Angel sat on the floor before the hearth and looked at the barren fireplace. My life is just like that, a bare, cold, useless hole in a wall. She was stupid and clumsy. Oh, but she was beautiful. She touched her face. Or she had been. She got up. She had to do something, anything. She needed light and warmth. She had watched Hosea build a fire often enough. Maybe she could do it herself. She took wood chips and piled them, then laid kindling in small branches. She took the flint and steel from the mantel, but no matter how hard she tried, she could barely strike a spark. Michael stood in the doorway watching her. He had gone out for her earlier and seen her sitting beside the creek, so dejected she didn't even notice he was there. He stood by, watching over her until she wandered back to the house. He might as well have been invisible. She was so tightly wrapped in herself, her own misery and dark thoughts, that she was blind to everything else, especially him. Cursing, she put her fists against her eyes. Michael put his hand lightly on her hair and felt her jump. "Let me show you how to do it." He hunkered down beside her and held out his hand. She handed him tools. "First of all, you can't expect to get it perfect the first time. It takes practice." "Like cooking stew," he wanted to say. "Like living a different way of life." Angel watched him lay the fire and strike the flint. A spark caught, and he blew on it gently until the shavings smoked and began to burn. He added small kindling, then larger branches. Within minutes, the fire was going. Michael sat back, his forearms resting on his raised knees. He intended to enjoy the fire and Mara's closeness, but she had other ideas. She took the poker and knocked the branches off and scattered the kindling and wood chips. She smashed every last ember. Kneeling closer, she laid the fire just as he had done. She did it exactly right, then struck the flint and steel. She made a spark, but it didn't catch. She tried again, more resolute, and failed. Her burned hand hurt abominably, but she clutched the tools with such absolute determination that her palms began to sweat. With each failure, her chest ached more, until the pain was so permeating, so deep and disabling, that she sank back on her heels. "I can't." What was the use? Michael's heart ached for her. She had never once cried, even when she was out of her mind with fever, and God knew she needed to. "Let go of it, Mara." "Fine." Angel put the flint and steel between them. "You do it."
"That's not what I mean.
You try too hard. You expect to do everything right. It's not possible.
I don't know what you're talking about. All I want to do is build a fire.
We don't even speak the same language, he said flatly. He might as well be speaking English to a Spanish-speaking California girl. It's like fighting me when you don't have to.
She refused to look at him. Build it again so I can see what I did wrong.
He did as she asked. She watched closely and saw she had done nothing wrong. Why hadn't her fire caught? The hearth was full of blazing light, and he had done it all in but a few moments. Her fire wouldn't even start, but his would last the night.
Angel came to her feet abruptly and stepped away. She hated his competence. She despised his calm. She wanted to destroy both, and she only had one weapon she knew how to use. She stretched sinuously, aware of his gaze upon her.
"I suppose I'll get it eventually," she said and sat on the bed. "My shoulders ache. Would you massage them the way you did before?"
Michael did as she asked. He needed the tension from her muscles, increasing his own.
"That feels good," she said, and the sultry tone sent his pulse racing. Her hair slipped back and was like silk over his working hands. When he put one knee on the bed, she put her hand on his thigh.
"So that's it," he thought ruefully. She figured she couldn't build a fire in the grate, so she would build one in him instead. It hadn't taken her any time at all to do it. He drew back.
Angel felt his retreat and followed him. She slid her arms around his waist, pressing herself against his straight back.
"I know I need someone to take care of me, and I'm glad you came back for me."
"Jesus, give me strength."
Michael closed his eyes. When her hands moved, he caught her wrists and withdrew from her embrace completely. When he turned, Angel was ready. She knew how to act the role. She knew all the words by heart. Soft, broken words, calculating words to tear at his heart, to make him feel his rejection had hurt her. Stir guilt in with the hot blood boiling. Give him reasons and excuses to give in. That last evening in the brothel had already weakened him. He was a lamb ready for the slaughter. Angel came to him again, shutting down her emotions and using her mind instead. She pulled his head down and kissed him. Michael dug his fingers into her hair and kissed her back. She used what she knew to wage war against him. She didn't know anything about building fires or cooking stew, but she knew all about this. He disentangled himself, gripping her shoulders.
"You're so relentless," he said, unwilling to surrender.
Angel stared up at him and saw he wasn't fooled. He knew exactly what she was doing and why. She tried to pull away, but he wouldn't let her.
"It doesn't have to be the way you know."
"Let go of me." She struggled frantically. Michael saw she was hurting herself and released her. She stepped well away from him.
"Did all that make you feel any better?"
"Yes," she hissed, lying through her teeth.
"God help me."
She had wanted him to feel more than physical discomfort. She had wanted to annihilate him. She wanted to see him squirm like a worm on a hook. She plunked herself down in the willow chair, her neck stiff, and stared straight ahead. Michael looked at her bleakly. Her silence screamed profanity at him. She thought she had lost, but did she think he had won? He went outside. "Does this woman have a compromising bone in her body, Lord? Or is this what I've got to look forward to for the rest of my life? Jesus, she doesn't fight fair."
"She's fighting you the only way she knows how."
Michael went down to the creek and knelt, splashing cold water on his face. He stayed on his knees for a long time. Then he went to the barn for the metal wash tub. When he came in, Angel kept her back to him. He set the tub before the fire. She looked from it to him and away again, saying nothing. Had she made him feel dirty? Did he need a bath now to wash her off?
He spent the next hour toting water from the well and heating it in the big black pot hanging over the fire. He tossed a bar of soap into the water.